Hello, six pack of confidence. Been so many nights since we first met. Glad to see you brought all your friends for another night of Plastic Cup Politics.
Man, that mustache is looking so good.
Yeah.
Little thing on the ends was like, I almost wanted to shave the beard so you just rock that fucking mustache.
I tried it once, dude, and it was a mistake. It was bad. It was so bad.
Well, you remember Miley, yeah. My mustache. Like, I look back and there are certain times where I'm like, that looks pretty good. And there are other pictures I'm like, oh, Jesus, no wonder people weren't letting me around their kids. Welcome to a new episode of Plastic Cup Politics Podcast. We were talking about my mustache. What do you know?
I swear to God, you should lead in cold with that conversation.
I just, you know what? This is all for shits and grins anyway. We just might do that. Plastic Cup Politics Podcast. This is not necessarily a facial hair renowned podcast, but we'll get into that. It is based on drinking and politics right here in our home state of Arizona. At Plastic Cup Pod, on all your favorite social media sites, and subscribe to Plastic Cup Politics. However you figured out how you're listening to this, go ahead, hit subscribe on there. We are recording on the very last day of March. There is a bejesus load going on, and I suppose that we should get into the salutations. I am your host, Mark LaRue. He is Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD. That PhD is in political science. He's doing internet security type stuff right now for the finance and travel industries. We don't care about that right now. We're kind of focusing on like the politics side of things and whatever that delicious beverage is that Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD, is drinking.
We should probably start by saying we're recording on the last day of May, not March.
That has always been an issue for me.
I've done it a couple of times already, too. And I had like a situation at work that sort of dealt with something that occurred in the month of March. And the number of times I've screwed it up in writing recently is ridiculous. Anyway, what am I up to and what am I drinking? So tonight I am drinking Papago Desert Sage Orange IPA. It's very nice. It's not as hopped as some IPAs. And as we've discussed ad nauseum on this show, I prefer my IPAs a little more mellow.
I am completely unfamiliar with that. I wonder if my friend, who is a part of Papago from back in the day, she was part of Orange Blossom. I wonder if... Because there is no Papago Brewing anymore. Brewing is Huss. Cool. It's good.
Yeah, it's delicious. The orange flavor isn't as strong as the is it Four Peaks who has the orange blossom one? Or,
no, I'm pretty sure that was what it was. Is there like, well, we have this orange stuff still hanging around. We've been banging it out with the orange blossom, which is really, really good, guys. Yeah. If you're looking for like a creamsicle in a beer. The orange blossom is really good. And I've never heard of that. And Papago's gone. So it's kind of weird for them to come out with a new beer. But I guess it probably Huss had some IPA rolling around. They're like, we can keep using that orange. And Papago, everybody loves the orange there. We'll do the orange IPA.
Yeah. And so they added agave and sage. You can taste a little bit of the sage. It's not overpowered by the other things in there. The agave, it's not sweet at all. It reads almost like a grown-up version of Orange Blossom.
I am still drinking water. I'll be back to booze at some point in time, guys. Just, you know, a little breaky until I want to have a drink.
Yeah,
I haven't quite gotten there yet.
Get there. Yeah.
That's the great thing about doing a drinking podcast. You don't always have to drink. Mine's not medically related like Sean's was a little while back. Everything's still great on that front?
Absolutely. Everything is fantastic. Shoulder's almost completely healed at this point. There's been no sign of any sort of, what do they call it? So if I'm in remission right now, coming out of remission, whatever the hell they call that, there's been no sign of that. Yeah. So on the health front, I've been doing really well. Work is similar, and it's just the world around us that's going to hell in a handbasket.
Which is a really lackluster intro into everything that's going on. We are an Arizona-based podcast, so as of today... May 31st, in about 54 minutes from right now when we're recording, there will be curfew. There is a curfew in our home state of Arizona, around the whole state because of everything that's been going on behind the George Floyd, his being killed, his being kneeled on for 9 minutes until he could no longer live. case there's no way that you guys don't know about this. Anyway, the world's kind of gone haywire. I've been trying to do as much listening as I possibly can, because I don't know if a podcast from a couple mid-40s white guys is going to be the one that's going to be the voice of reason. I don't know how hashtag woke we will be considered. But I was laying in bed with my lovely fiance when I got the news thing that the police station in Minnesota was on fire. Yeah. And it really upset me. And this is what I think and what my initial thoughts and my thoughts that I have not gone away from, which is that is not my way of protesting. Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD, and I have, I know we've been to at least one protest. I fear we've probably been to a couple more.
Yeah, I think so.
I've also had to come to terms with that there's a right way to do things, but every way that's not that way isn't necessarily the wrong way to do things.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I think that there needs to be something done. I'm not sure what. I'm still holding back. And the one thing that I will say is that I do value people over property. And the one thing that I want to get out right here at the beginning, because I really, something that I came up with and I'm rather proud of it, which is when people are posting things on social media, one way or the other, you can always just add that George Floyd was not available for comment.
Yep.
And that's where I'm going to leave off, and I'm going to do a little bit more listening.
So it's really interesting. I mentioned, I think, before we started recording that I had a conversation with my daughter earlier. she started the conversation in sort of typically nonchalant but still grandiose Phoenix style, walking into the living room and announcing boldly, "So, what do you guys think about these riots that are going on?" Yeah. So we had a really interesting conversation, and what I realized is that the conversation around race in the United States sort of ebbs and flows in terms of the amount of nuance we're willing to accept, right? So there are moments where there's a sort of more thoughtful national conversation about race that acknowledges how far we've come and how far we have yet to go as a nation. And then there are moments when the pain is just too much, and that thoughtful conversation just isn't possible in those moments. We've been here as a country before, and most recently in 1991 in Los Angeles, and by the way, for all of you who are too young to have lived through this experience and are listening to this podcast, and you would like to see sort of the original outrage video, you can go and it's still available on YouTube, the video of four white police officers brutally beating an unarmed black man named Rodney King, who they pulled over for driving drunk. And admittedly, King was driving recklessly. He did all sorts of crazy shit that night. What they did to him was wrong. It was criminal. And all four of them should have gone to prison for it. Instead, a predominantly white jury acquitted all four of them. And afterwards, LA exploded in several days of some of the most deadly rioting this country had seen since 1968, which is very few people refer back to the 91 riots at this point. Most of the articles that I've been reading reference the 1968 riots. And I think I know why, and we'll get to that in a minute when we start talking about the orange-tinted sack of monkey shit in the Oval Office, because he's really the one that for whatever reason, decided to take us back to 1968. Let's call it blatant and blistering racism. I think that's what prompted him to take us back to 1968 instead of 1991. In 91... it was pretty obvious to most of the people watching that situation take place, and I'm fairly certain to most of the people who were living through it, black people in the United States and people of color in the United States in general had tried all there was to try, and the pain was just too much. Right? And so that thoughtful conversation about race sort of pulled back, and people were ready to fight, and they had to fight for a few days, right? That rage had, it's like cooking with a pressure cooker. And every now and again, you've got that safety relief valve. You've got to release some of the pressure from that pressure cooker. And they do it themselves these days. But it used to be, it was, you did it, right? You were the emergency relief valve for your pressure cooker. And it's why the early ones blew up very frequently. You know, we had reached the point where someone had to put their thumb on that emergency release and let off a bunch of steam and lower the pressure inside that cooker. And that's what happened in 91 during the riots. And it is a tragedy anytime anyone is killed. It is a tragedy that is compounded when people die on both sides of the question. And 30 years later, we are right back where we started. Having elected the first black president the United States had ever seen, re-electing him by an overwhelming margin, not an overwhelming margin, but a sound margin. Not only are we no further than we were in 1991, but in many ways we've taken steps backwards. We've now lived through 4 years of one of the most racist administrations since the Nixon administration, and that's saying a lot, because Reagan's original race in 1980 was where the Southern strategy was really deployed in full force, and its entire raison d'etre was playing on the racism of Southern white men who were fleeing the Democratic Party, which was the dominant party in the South up until that time. So we've just spent 4 years living through the most racist administration since Nixon, and maybe even more racist than the Nixon administration, to be entirely honest. Now, I know that part of this is an optical illusion, right? Part of it is that there were a lot of killings, extrajudicial killings by the police back in 1991 of black men around this country. But we didn't see them on TV, right? Because people weren't right. I know this is going to be shocking to some of our younger listeners, but there was a time when not everyone had a camera on them. Like the person who videotaped the Rodney King beating, it was with a shoulder-mounted video camera. Like a camera so fucking big, you had to rest it on your shoulder. You couldn't carry it with one hand. Like a camera, like a news camera is what this person was using. And that's what like home camcorders used to be like back in the dizzy.
Jesus Christ, we're old.
Yeah. So now everyone's got a super, super high fucking definition camera in their pocket. So now we're seeing these clips much more often. Nevertheless, even though I intuitively know that the numbers probably have not changed all that much, to everyone in this country, it is perceived as a dramatic increase in the rate at which police officers are murdering unarmed black people in the United States.
Right. It's just an increase of it being videotaped.
Exactly. But the outcome is the impact is the same. Right. Whether it was a real increase in the number of black men and women. Right. Because that's one of the other things we need to get to is that it's not just George Floyd right now. If it had just been George Floyd, I don't know that we would be seeing the riots that we're seeing right now. But and I'm going to fuck up her last name. I think it's Keona McBride. Maybe she was also killed over Memorial Day. Another unarmed black person who was killed by the police. And then there's Ahmaud Arbery. Who was chased down and murdered for the crime of jogging through a white neighborhood.
And once again, you'll notice that one was not a big deal until video came out.
Mm-hmm. No one wanted to do shit until somebody released a video. And the person who took the video, by the way, was on the side of the guys who murdered Ahmaud Arbery. He thought that video would fucking exonerate them. And that's why he released it. I'm like, did you not even watch it? What kind of bizarre fucking racist mindset do you have to watch that video and go, yep, that'll get my boys off?
Caught himself a charge on that one.
Yeah, and fucking goddamn right. And you know who else needs to be charged? It's the two fucking pigs who stood by and watched Derek Chauvin, or whatever the fuck his name is, murder George Floyd. One of them took George Floyd's pulse a full minute before Chauvin took his knee off his neck and said, I can't find one. And neither of them turned to him and go, dude, you're murdering this dude. Get off. Right. here's one thing that that everyone needs to understand. Even if you didn't charge them as accomplices, the dereliction of duty. As police officers, it is their responsibility to police other police officers as well. If you see a fellow officer engaged in a crime, it is your duty to stop them as a cop. And they did not. They stood by and they watched this person murder another human being, an unarmed human being, for the crime of falling down repeatedly rather than being thrust into the back of a cruiser willingly.
Over 20 bucks.
Over 20 bucks. Yeah. A supposedly counterfeit bill. And I say supposedly only because I have not actually seen the evidence, but it sounds like it probably was a fake bill. Whether George Floyd knew he was passing a fake bill, we'll never know, because as you so pithily put it, George Floyd is not available for comment. You and I sometimes differ on what we're willing to accept in terms of protest. Most of the time, you and I are actually on the same page as far as what's acceptable in terms of protest. I'll explain where we sort of start to part ways. So there are a few different ways to think about protest and civil disobedience. And for those of you who are not aware, once upon a time I was a college professor, and I in fact taught two semesters of a class on civil disobedience and protest. The culminating project of which was my students had to go out and actually stage a real protest in the real world and engage in acts of civil disobedience, including doing the sorts of things that got George Floyd murdered, right? Passive resistance, refusing to be willingly taken into a cop car, blah, 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 blah. And I think back now on that class actually with a little bit of horror, right? I think about, and I'll explain why. There was a comedian the other day, Matt Bronger. There was a moment where he was talking about how the Gin Blossoms were the most racist band on earth because they wrote a song that contained more white privilege than any other song ever. And it, for a specific line, and that line was, I forget how it starts, but it's, "And let the cops chase us around."
Yeah, one of the greatest songs ever. Hey, Jealousy.
Yeah. Hey, Jealousy.
I love that song.
So
gonna drive around this town, let the cops chase us around.
Yeah. So how fucking steeped in white privilege do you have to be not to look at that and go, wait a minute? But what kind of world do I live in where like that's not bullshit. You know, like you get good old boys and their kids get slaps on the wrist out in the country all the time for doing weird shit. And the cops chasing them around and they don't get murdered. They don't get institutionalized. They don't get put into the prison industrial complex.
Yeah, we all remember like that scene in Rad, the movie Rad. It
was just
fun and games back then.
Exactly. I think back on that course that I taught and I'm like, dang, man, like, I could really only get away with teaching that class because I and the majority of my students were white, right? Because otherwise I would be running the real risk of getting one of my students injured or killed because of the way that police in the United States respond to people of color on a regular basis. And part of it, actually a significant portion of it, is institutional. It's not that the individual cop is a racist, although there are some, right? Anyone who denies that is either a liar or a fool, one of the two.
It's the thin blue line.
So there are a few different ways to think about protest and civil disobedience. And by the way, mere protest is not in and of itself an act of civil disobedience, right? Because protest is enshrined in the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. So protest, as long as you remain within the reasonable boundaries set by the government, right? Because the Supreme Court has ruled that no right is absolute, including the Second Amendment, the First Amendment. None of these are absolute. Government, if they have a legitimate interest, can place restrictions on the right to assemble and seek public redress, right? So you can't protest in ways that damage other people's property. You can't protest in ways that could present an immediate danger to the life or well-being of other citizens. Like, you can't protest in a way that blocks all the entrances to a hospital. And, you know, the courts have been fairly agreeable on the idea that you just can't protest in ways in general that block roadways, that impede traffic. And the argument there is that what if you impede traffic that includes emergency vehicles? Fair enough. I don't happen to agree on that one. I think blocking traffic actually is a well-established and important method of civil disobedience. As long as you're not damaging anyone's vehicles, all you're doing is sort of generating that moment of inconvenience so that they are confronted with your pain. Because that's the idea of protest. And it's not because you're whiny and you want to get out there and, you know, and break shit or steal stuff or, you know, you just want to yell at people a lot. It's that inside you are feeling a pain that you can no longer keep to yourself, and that pain needs to be shoved in the faces of the people who are in charge. And so, you know, I happen to think that blocking traffic is actually a perfectly acceptable and should be a legal way to go about doing that. And in most places, by the way, it is. The Supreme Court has ruled that municipalities can place restrictions on it, but it's not inherently restricted. And in most places, it's still legal, right? Which is why you had, during the original wave of Black Lives Matter protests, you had a lot of people online who were yelling about how I would just fucking run them down, right? You should just fucking run them over because the cops can't move them.
And then Charlottesville happened.
Yeah, and then Charlottesville happened, and you still have people who will suggest just running them over, and in some cases, people who will still do it.
I definitely saw an NYPD.
Yeah, it's a real problem for Bill de Blasio right now, who sort of made his name on, you know, supposedly fighting injustice in policing techniques in the city of New York. And then here is the NYPD ramming people with squad cars.
Not a good look.
No, not a good look.
I also understand if those police officers feel that they were in danger, because they might have been in danger, but
it's possible.
I'm way more middle. Like I said, dude, I've been listening and I've been watching, and I mean, there is just so much stuff, and I do somewhat get it. Like, I'm just sitting in my couch and watching videos. I think it was in Salt Lake City, of the cops just knocking down this old dude with a cane. And it just, it's one of those things where these things, they become more real to you when you can put a face on it. And when I thought of somebody like my dad going out to like try to take a picture, because it's something that my dad would do if there were cops down his street, and then them starting to yell and him trying to hustle his ass back to the house and have a cop come and shove him from behind and knock him down. Those are the things, you know, that put a face on it. And, you know, and it's like, it made me really angry. And then, of course, I understand that. Anyway, I'm going to start listening a little bit more again.
That's all right, man. So you have protest as sort of like level one. And then the next step is nonviolent civil disobedience. And this is one of the things that we spent a lot of time on in the course that I taught. There's a lot of theory, there's a lot of scholarship around civil disobedience, right? A lot of it came out of scholars who learned valuable lessons in the 1960s as a part of the civil rights movement, the 1960s and 1970s. But that movement itself was informed by the civil disobedience, right? Because like the granddaddy of civil disobedience was Gandhi, right? Who brought the British Empire to its knees via techniques of civil disobedience. And a lot of the people in the civil rights movement in the 60s and 70s in the United States learned a lot of what they knew about how to engage in tactics of civil disobedience from writings by and about Gandhi and his movement protesting the British Raj, trying to bring that to an end. Although, you know, initially, I mean, that wasn't even really Gandhi's purpose at the beginning. It wasn't really to bring about the end of the Raj. And in the end, the Raj outlived him. It took World War II to ultimately bring about the end of British Empire. And even now, they're still sort of trying to hold on to it. They have the Falklands and Northern Ireland.
Those Falkland Islands.
Yeah, those Falkland Islands. And then there are good arguments, sound logical arguments, whether I agree with them or not. And in some cases I do, some cases I don't. By scholars from a much more rough and tumble school. Of protest, right? And anarchism has a long theoretical background, you know, going back hundreds of years, literally hundreds of years now, actually. The nation state itself has been around that long. and you can't really have anarchists without the idea of sort of collective institutionalized civil society, because that's sort of what they're rebelling against. Right?
So, I listen to Propagandhi.
Yeah, there you go. You have a lot of informed writing from there that says, okay, look, you're enmeshed within a political system. There's not necessarily a way for you to get outside of that, although there's no way for you to sort of voluntarily depart, because there's no other place on earth for you to go. There's no unincorporated territories for all the anarchists to flock to. So you have to live within the society you're in, blah, blah, blah. I'm butchering this, by the way. Like Jack is cringing somewhere with the horrible disservice I'm doing to sort of anarchist scholarship. The guy named Wolf, In Defense of Anarchism, is the name of his book. Really short read, and it is amazingly informative. But there comes a point at which you have to ask, have I done all that I can do peacefully, including peaceful civil disobedience? And if the answer is yes, and then you ask, has there been enough change? And the answer is no, then there may be justification for going out and breaking shit up. Right? And people, I had sort of a heated version of this discussion with my wife earlier today. The very first sort of counter argument that gets trotted out is like, well, you're hurting small business owners in your area, or large corporations too, right? Because, you know, you got plenty of corporate franchises that can get busted up in these little neighborhoods too. You're hurting them, but they're not the source of your pain, right? Like, they're not the cops and they're not the government. But that's not really true, is it? Because the government in the United States is incorporated at the behest of and with the delegated power of the people, including those shop owners. And the police are instituted primarily to protect the property of those shop owners. It's why you get a much better response time if you're a Target calling the cops than if you're just a homeowner in Guadalupe. Right? So it's not necessarily the case, even though, I mean, they may be the most sympathetic characters on earth. They may be legitimately 100% on your side, like ready to get out there and march with you. And nevertheless, they are a legitimate target under these their business is a legitimate target under these circumstances, because it is the only thing that makes them listen. Right? There comes a moment where damage is the only thing that will make them listen. We reached that moment in 1991. We are back at that moment again. And I repeat, the tragedies of 1991 have been compounded by the fact that we have made no progress since. Please tell me I'm getting a year right for the Rodney King riots. I now think I got it wrong. Damn it, I've been saying 91 the whole time. It's 1992. Shit. We've come all this way since 1992 and made no progress.
What about the idea of looting is just to get stuff?
Like, for some people, look, anytime you have this sort of unrest, you are going to have some people who are like, I'm poor, I'm going to go get mine. Right? Or, hell, Jenny was just telling me today, some fucking multi-millionaire YouTuber, not Ron Paul.
Paul. Yeah, yeah. I only knew him because he was on Ridiculousness, but yeah.
Fashion Square. Fucking broke into Fashion Square with a bunch of other people. Fashion Square, for those of you who aren't in Arizona and are listening, is sort of our rich guy mall. It's where the Tesla dealership is located, if that tells you anything.
That actually, okay, this perfectly will line up into my question that I was hoping to figure out the right way to say, which is, yeah, a bunch of people like him going into Fashion Square and beating stuff up, where, if you remember back to 1992 and basically all of that kind of stuff, which is, why are they doing that to their own community? Why would they destroy their own community? Why, you know, like black on black crime? Why are they they're just killing each other? And then all of a sudden they're like, okay, we'll go to Fashion Square, which is the ritziest mall in Phoenix. We'll go there. And then Ducey goes, we're going to need everybody to go home by 8 o'clock because as soon as you start busting up fucking the Apple store.
Yeah.
And that kind of just leading into the perpetuation of the stereotype of the people that are going to say, just like New Orleans after Katrina, that they're just going to loot and that's all they're doing. Or do we just let them give the Twisted Sister approach, which is I have always loved, which is if you think that we're sick, then sick is what we'll be.
Hell, man, that's part of it, sure. And there are always, like I said, there are going to be people who are opportunists during any moment like this. Or there are people who are just beat down, man, and they're just going to go and grab something because they haven't been able to before and they can now. But there's an important thing to note about that group of people. It's incredibly small. And relative to the number of people in the streets venting their rage right now, it is a tiny percentage of them. But it's what people will focus on for two reasons. One, there's a small group of people out there who are just racist enough to actually believe it. Right? And then there's a much larger group of people for whom it is a convenient excuse, a convenient way to ignore the pain and rage of those protesters, is to chalk it all up as looting and greed. Right? Then you don't have to be confronted with your part in the system that is murdering those people and their families. And make no mistake about it, we all play a part in that system.
I mean, we kind of came from the punk scene, and you definitely, if you've been to shows, if you were in shows in the 90s, you realized that we had a really good punk scene, and then you'd get 4-5 Nazis that would show up and just ruined the whole scene. You know, like the whole show. Like, it just made the show fucking miserable. Yes, it only takes a few fuckheads.
So why do they fuck up their own neighborhoods? This is a great lead-in to our dear leader's role in this drama. So the very first response that Der Cheeto Hitler had to the first night of rioting was to tweet a quote from a police chief in Florida. That police chief was around during the 1960s, including the 1968 riots. And a part of his quote was, "When the looting starts, the shooting starts." By which he meant, and he clarified, there was no ambiguity here. He meant they absolutely would brutalize and kill anyone who engaged in direct action, whether that be looting or destruction of property, etc.
And this is, to be sure, we are discussing right at this moment the Miami sheriff.
Yes. Yeah. Was it O'Brien? Was that his last name? Yeah, whatever. Doesn't matter. Let that fucker be lost to history.
Klansman Sam. It's fine.
Yeah. So this dude was a real piece of shit, and Dump decided that that was going to be his first presidential entree into this national discussion, was to tweet a quote from this guy. So you were asking, why do they fuck up their own neighborhoods? Because those are the only neighborhoods they can fuck up without getting shot. They go into white neighborhoods, the police will start shooting.
Yeah, I watched those videos, too, of people being shot in their own front yard, standing in their own doorways. Mm-hmm. Hey, that was cool. I would also like to say that you're never going to hear me spout off with fuck the police, or even I heard Sean make reference, but not calling anybody pigs, anything like that. That's because there could be a chance in my life that I might need a cop, and it's really easy to say fuck the cops until you need one. Boop. Okay, so we stopped recording, and I realized I missed a thought. So I'm actually going to move this into the middle of the show where I want it. But we were discussing OJ, and to where it may have seemed that he was found innocent because they didn't want to convict a black man. And this is my whole thing about this cop, the main one that was kneeling on his neck. I don't give a shit about what his name is, but about them wanting him to go to jail. And there's so many different times that people have been arrested. Cops have been arrested and then not convicted, were found innocent. And what's going to make this any different? And I don't want it to be that if they don't find him guilty, that there's going to be an even bigger riot. There's going to be even bigger social injustice. I want it to be he goes to jail because he belongs to be in jail. And I feel like that's going to be curved in the wrong direction. Like, I don't, like, just realize, find the evidence. It looks pretty fucking evident that this man was murdered, and I want that cop to go to jail because it's what's just, not because of what repercussions may happen outside the court.
Yeah, I don't think it's likely that he'll be convicted as a result of repercussions outside the court. But what has changed, right? And this actually goes back to something we were talking about before. You know, I mentioned that we've come all this way and have made very little progress. Here's one way in which we have made some progress since 1992, not 1991. some of the dirty tricks that were played, basically moving the trial for those officers to a predominantly white area so that they could get a whiter jury that was less likely to convict. A lot of those things are unlikely to happen now. In part because we have made some small amounts of progress in changing our institution so that those sorts of things are harder to do, but also in part because of the protests. So this is the counter to what you were saying, right? It's not that he's going to be convicted because people are afraid of what will happen if he's not convicted, right? If he's acquitted. He is more likely to be convicted than the four men who beat Rodney King because these protests and the protests in 1992 and, you know, a lot of the things that have happened in between have made it clear that if you want to get a dirty cop off, you're going to have to be a little more creative than you were in the past. And under these circumstances, I don't think they could get, they're too under a microscope to use the same tricks that they typically use to get cops exonerated for what's clearly criminal behavior.
Back into your regularly scheduled show. Antifa is going to be a terrorist organization.
No, it's not. Not unless he has Congress amend our anti-terrorism laws, right? So those terrorist designations, those are the result of acts of legislation, not the whimsy of some president, and they are exclusively aimed at foreign organizations, and they're aimed at foreign organizations for a reason.
So they don't have to put the Klan on the list.
Well, yeah, that's part of it. But also because we have a little thing called the First Amendment in the United States. So designating a domestic organization as a terrorist group under those sorts of laws, right? Those laws, by the way, those designations can lead to things like suspension of habeas corpus for members of that organization, which we've seen with people at Gitmo ad nauseum since, you know, 2001 at this point. The other reason, so that's one reason it won't be designated as a terrorist organization, because those laws have not been amended. And even if they were, those amendments would be unconstitutional under the First Amendment. The other reason it won't be designated as a terrorist organization is in itself indicative of how little Donald Trump and most people, for that matter, know about anarchist organizations.
There is no leadership.
Yeah. It's an oxymoron to call something an anarchist organization. It's antithetical to what they do to form large national organizations. They operate as small autonomous collectives, and those collectives adopt similar tactics and modes of dress, but they are not governed by some overarching structure that can itself be designated as a terrorist organization. And you can't take hundreds of small autonomous groups of individuals, most of whom have engaged in no violent behavior whatsoever, designate all of them as a terrorist group and suspend their rights as citizens of the United States. That's not the way this works. Even the Roberts court would not uphold it. It's Dump playing to his base when he says that. I'm sure his advisors have already informed him it won't work. He knows. He's riling up the racists who support him.
since we've already discussed when the looting starts, the shooting starts, I guess we can go ahead and get into, I think that all the Trump supporters should join a protest. If social media is going to do these terrible things to the president, they should probably log off.
I love it. It's great. Yes, they should absolutely do that.
I saw what you guys did with your fucking Keurig machines. If you're going to launch a Keurig machine with a golf club, you should probably just turn off Facebook and let us all live our fucking lives.
The jerseys of all those horrible black men who knelt during the national anthem. Jamel Bowie, by the way, he's an opinion writer for the New York Times, wrote in a piece the other day, it shouldn't surprise anyone that these protests have become the way that they are. When every time for, every time, let's just say in recent memory, right? Because I don't want to have to pick a date because it goes back for a depressingly long fucking time. But every time black men and black people in general, right, black men and women, have chosen a peaceful method to try and raise and redress their grievances, we have taken that from them as well, right? So Colin Kaepernick and the other black men and sympathetic non-black players in the NFL kneel during the national anthem to protest police violence against black Americans, and we take that away from them, right? We stomp that down, and then we wonder a few years later.
The president stomps that down. The president stomps that down and does not address what they were trying to address, which was this racial inequality and police violence on the black community. And he says that it's anti-patriotic. And so, well, clearly that form of protest did not land. Do you think that if the president might have taken that a little more seriously and been less cavalier and less pandering, that maybe it might have sent a message that this might not have gone over as easily?
Yeah. So what needs to happen right now for this to come to an end is one side or the other, preferably in small ways both, have to back down. One reason the government is going to have to back down first is because the government is in control. The government has a monopoly on the institutional deployment of violence against its own citizens. The government has the law on its side. The government has money on its side. It has institutions. It has numbers. The other reason that the government is going to have to be the first one to back down is there is no leadership for the rioters. There's no central organization to stand up and go, you know what, you're right, we need to all collectively take a step back and talk for a day and try and find a way to not have any more violence moving forward, right? So the government is going to have to take that step first. How fucking hopeless does that make you feel? To know that Der Cheeto Hitler is the one, right? And what we're ultimately going to end up seeing, just like we did during the coronavirus crisis, is he will abdicate responsibility, run away from it, and it will be the governors who will have to be the ones who step forward and go, okay, we're going to take a step back. We're going to allow you, you know. And a lot of this will be very subtle changes in police tactics, responding to protesters on the ground, giving them a little bit more latitude to move, intervening only when there's already direct evidence of like destruction of property or violence, blah, 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 but not confronting the protesters as directly as they have. That's going to be the first sign that the government is taking a step back and allowing space for the people on the other side to vent their rage, come around and start to talk. Right. And in that space, they can look for prominent figures who have assumed a leadership role, even though these are sort of decentralized protests. That's where we're going to have to get to. It is unfortunately going to take much longer than it should because we have no national leadership. Just like everything about our coronavirus response is taking much longer than it should because we have no national leadership. Just like our economic response is taking longer than it should and is too anemic because we have no national leadership. And the most pathetic part is that his supporters still claim that he's a strong leader. You made mention earlier, I referred to the two officers who were there with Derek Chauvin as pigs. There is a part of me that is tempted to fall back on that old racist argument of, you know, I love black people. It's just, you know, it's those other ones I hate. You know, I have some of my best friends are cops, which is true. Right. And so I have a lot of friends who are also former cops. So I am well aware of the fact that not all cops are bad people. And the statistics bear it out that the vast majority of cops go their whole career without ever drawing their sidearm, like some absurd number, like 90% of all police officers in the United States go their entire career without ever drawing their sidearm. You know, the vast majority of cops go their entire career without ever engaging in a physical altercation with a suspect because they don't need to. Either because they police in areas where it's not that common, or they police in areas that have implemented community policing models to reduce the rate of confrontation between police officers and the communities they serve, which is an important distinction, by the way. It's not the communities they rule, it's the communities they serve. And that's where the cops need to start bending on the other side, right? Is they need to get back to the idea that, hey, wait, we're not in charge here. We serve these people. We're here because they employ us to be here and they pass the laws that give us the space needed for us to be here. So we need to start treating them like that. So, you know, there's a lot of movement that needs to happen in both directions, but I can't back down from referring to those people as exactly what they are. If there is a cop out there that it is fitting to refer to as a fucking pig, it's the three cops who murdered George Floyd.
Yeah.
The Twitter thing. Here's the funny part, right? And there have been a couple of articles about this out there, so some of you may have heard of it already, but here's the real big thing. So what dumbass is referring to is Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act passed in 1996. Pretty sure it's 1996.
If you're off by a year, it's fine on this show.
Yeah, it's not nearly as bad as being off by a year for the fucking LA riots. So I think it was 96. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So that amendment to the Communications Decency Act, amendment to it? I think it was an amendment to it. Creating Section 230, which basically made a carve out for technology platforms like Twitter and Facebook, even though those weren't really things at that point, to say, unlike newspapers and broadcast media outlets, newspapers, magazines, broadcast media outlets, etc., which had long been considered legally responsible for the things that they publish. And so if you're a news anchor and you say on the air that Joe Scarborough had an affair with that woman and murdered her in his office, right? Joe Scarborough and his family and that woman's family can sue the fuck out of you and the publication that aired, not the publication, the broadcaster that aired your newscast for libel and all the intentional infliction of emotional distress, blah, 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 like all this stuff. And it's why newspapers and broadcast media traditionally have had things like fact checkers and a robust editorial process to make sure that the information they're putting out there is vetted. Did they make mistakes? Yes, of course, everyone makes mistakes, but by and large, they get it right. And then unfortunately, we towards the end of the 90s, with the advent of a little thing called Fox News, we started to see that go away. Hopefully, eventually, it will come back. But here's the important part. The law said that technology platforms were different. They weren't publishing these things. They were merely providing a space in which other people could publish their own ideas. And that those people were the ones who were legally responsible for the content of their ideas, not the company. Let's say in a fantasy world, Trump actually could do away with Section 230 of that law without actually having to go back to Congress. He can't, but let's say for a second that he could. What that would do is open up a deluge of lawsuits against Twitter for the things Donald Trump says on his Twitter feed every day, ultimately resulting in Twitter having no choice but to permaban Donald Trump, otherwise get sued out of existence. So in his temper tantrum, he has invoked a method that would almost be guaranteed to take away his favorite toy. And not a single one of his advisors has been able to get through to him to point that fact out.
Yes, we'll see. Let's let that one hit the wall. See what happens. See what sticks.
Yeah, nothing's going to stick. Nothing. Which is why Twitter has doubled down and started adding those notices to more of his fucking tweets. Because they know for a fact that the courts aren't going to let it fly. There's no way Congress is going to pass it despite the noises that Marco Rubio and Josh Hawley are making. They would still need to go through Nancy Pelosi in the House. And Nancy Pelosi has already said, go fuck yourself. That's not happening. Does some change need to happen with Article 230? Yeah, probably, because we've already seen the Russians have been able to weaponize our own technology platform, our own social media platforms against us to destroy the legitimacy of the 2016 election. And they're doing a damn good job of doing the same thing to the upcoming 2020 election. And those same platforms have resulted in such a polarized political climate that we ended up electing a racist orangutan as president. Right. So, yes, some changes need to be made. But if you just do away with Article 230, the primary result will be that Donald Trump is no longer on Twitter. Which I can't necessarily say I object to be honest.
All right. We need to pull this train into the station. Despite all this is going on and all the protests and everything else, there is this thing called COVID-19 out there. And please remain to be vigilant. I had to do some work and I had to go to Pine on a Memorial Day, and oh my Lord, there were no masks in town, people just everywhere. Please. You'll see on the news. I saw something that the rates have gone up in Arizona. I think that with more testing, you're going to get more positives, but do pay attention to the amount of beds that are being used. Please stay vigilant just for me, man. Just for like another week. Just for like another week. Cause I want that 14 days. Cause if the shit's going to hit the fan, it's going to hit the fan right after Memorial Day weekend, man. It was fucking shitty.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're definitely going to see a spike there. Look, so one of the things I need to throw out there real quick. Old Sean has some experience with statistics back in his days as a researcher and college professor. And those infection rate statistics control for differences in the rate of testing. Right? So when you see them spiking, it's already accounting for the fact that we are testing more now than we did previously. Otherwise, there'd be no point in collecting that data.
Oh.
So the spike is legit. It's not just an artifact of more tests.
But I mean, when they're saying that there are 742 new tests on this day and 727 on the next day.
Oh, I'm just saying, yeah. I mean,
you know, so, if they're doing more tests, those numbers are going to go up because there's just because the tests are available now.
True. But keep in mind that here in the state of Arizona, we're actually not doing more testing. So our protocol is still that you have to be symptomatic and you have to be acutely symptomatic before you are recommended for a test. So we have not significantly increased our testing rate, and we are seeing an increase in the number of positive tests. We're going to see a significant spike over the summer. We are going to see a much bigger spike in the late fall when COVID makes a roaring comeback right as we're heading into flu season. Which is going to be super gnarly. And I want everyone to make sure that you start, you know, stockpiling the shit that we know is going to go away, right? You know, so pick up some extra toilet paper and extra paper towels and extra distilled water and all that shit right around summer's end, because there's going to be a period in the fall where we are going to see some more supply chain disruptions as we see some very dramatic spikes in the infection and mortality rates. Across the United States, the infection rates are spiking exactly as everyone predicted they would. It's focused mostly in states that opened early or that never really closed down all that significantly in the first place, like Arizona. And unfortunately, we're also seeing a lot in those states, very low adoption rates for social distancing. So just as an example, Jenny and I went to the Verde River yesterday with our two dogs. We went very early, expecting that there wouldn't be that many people there yet. There were thousands of people there already, and more were arriving. The banks of the Verde River were like packed shoulder to shoulder with large groups of people, none of them wearing masks, all of them mingling with each other openly, maintaining no distance either within groups or between groups. So, yeah, it's going to be pretty gnarly. The statistics are playing out essentially as we all assumed they would. And it's just a matter of how bad does it have to get before the federal government and the state governments have to start reimposing shutdowns. There was one county in California that already opened itself up and just yesterday had to shut back down again because of spiking infection rates.
Keep tuning in to Plastic Cup Politics Podcast at Plastic Cup Pod on all your favorite social media sites. And subscribe because I know you enjoyed this. And keep tuning in for when we say that we were wrong, because God damn it. It's one of those things like nobody ever wants to be wrong, especially nobody ever like start their own podcast would ever want to be wrong. But, dude, it makes my heart hurt so bad how much I want to be wrong, how much I want to be paranoid, how much. But just please, guys, hold on just a little bit longer, man. Just do everything you can. Wear your mask. Be scary. The mask really fucks up the beard, but good. I guess we'll go out on Hair Talk as well.
Oh, hey, before we leave, my wife has texted me to let me know that it is now 8:03. So we are 3 minutes into our curfew, and there are already police helicopters blanketing all of Central and downtown Phoenix. And here's the interesting part is that at no point did the emergency address system in the state of Arizona make an announcement about a curfew. So how are a lot of these people supposed to know?
I guess we'll find out on the next Plastic Cup Politics podcast.
Yeah, goddamn right we will.
Talk to you guys soon.
Later on. Whoa, 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 whoa. It's just a night.